This is Radio Superior 1953, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the evening Gather Round show.
Come on in, Gather Round campers. Tim Michaels here, lighting the campfire. It's Tuesday, June 16th, 1953, and what a show we have for you tonight.
You said that yesterday, and we talked about an Atomic Army Worms conspiracy.
Where else can you get that on a radio show? Rapid Ray is in with sports, and we'll have the debut of Hollywood Today. The 6 o'clock news brought to you by Westland Hardware. Get down to Jacobson Rotary Power Mower. Make cutting grass easy with that gift for Father's Day on Sunday. She's all yours, Lou.
Thanks, Tim, and good evening, everyone. The Red Chinese roll south in a vast offensive as truce talks continue. And atomic spies Ethel and Julius Rosenberg plead for mercy as they face electrocution Thursday night. We begin our world report from Korea.
This is Stan Turner in Munsan, South Korea, along the border with North Korea. Top-level troop negotiators meet tonight in Panmunjom for a fateful session which could bring a quick end to nearly 3 years of fighting in Korea. Only a line of demarcation to separate the two armies stands in the way of an armistice. But that line changes almost continually along a 40-mile front where U.S. and South Korean infantry battle perhaps 40,000 Reds. No official word came from today's secret truce sessions, but staff officers believe they are nearing the end of their work. Meanwhile, 7,000 women paraded through Seoul under banners reading, "Women, tighten your skirt belts and spring up. Give us death, if not unification." But there was no resumption of the angry anti-truce demonstrations which flared through South Korea last week. One group of officers working on details of exchanging prisoners, presumably, is all but through. That from a statement in Washington by Secretary of State John Foster Dulles that a demarcation line is the only remaining problem. In Munsan, this is Stan Turner.
Hello, this is Max Jordan in Seoul. The big Chinese offensive overwhelmed Finger Ridge, western anchor of the flaming 50-mile front in eastern Korea today, and rolled on south. The fate of this drive, which has hurled back the South Koreans east to the Pukan River, has shifted suddenly westward. Nearly 6,000 Chinese Reds hit Finger Ridge, scene of bitter fighting last fall. The ridge was lost by noon today. The Chinese, apparently bent on gaining vital ground before an armistice, drove into the teeth of Allied artillery and small arms fire. They appeared heedless of losses. The South Koreans to the east, along the Pukan River, had only just dug into new positions after being thrown back 2 miles by the 30,000-man Chinese offensive. On their east flank, about 750 Chinese Reds drove South Koreans from 7 positions near Christmas Hill. With both their west and eastern flanks menaced, the new South Korean position along the Pukan may be untenable. AP correspondent Milo Farnepi is reporting that South Korean troops now hold 2/3 of the Kiam Mountain. Meanwhile, 15 communist planes bombed Gimpo Airfield and Seoul's port of Incheon. In Seoul, this is Max Jordan.
Hal Boyle here in New York. A truce is not often a happy settlement of a problem, whether it be a schoolboy feud or a war in Korea. But since time sometimes cures more human ills than common sense, a truce often allows an interval in which the situation may change. That may be the great gift of a truce in Korea. A ripening of political reasoning in Asia may do more to achieve a balanced peace than continuing a 3-year war on that bitter peninsula, a war in which vast armies have buffeted each other like blind men in the dark. It has been an odd war. It is a war in which the United Nations decisively defeated the initial enemy, North Korea, fought inconclusively against the second enemy, Red China, and yet never locked in battle with what many feel to be the main enemy, Soviet Russia, the chief architect of aggression in the Far East and its main arsenal. In the Korean police action, the cops never caught the robbers. They merely chased them back into the next county and kept them at bay. And many critics of the campaign have pointed out this is the first one the United States hasn't won cleanly and clearly since 1812. But if Uncle Sam is to go on sharing with the British of being the world's policeman, it is a type of unsatisfactory war his nephews may have to face again and yet again. Other Koreas may await us around the globe, unless, which seems unlikely, we pull back into our shell and face the world crabwise. There are those who say that America has lost face in Asia as a result of the campaign in Korea. But how can a man or a nation lose face as long as they fight for what they hold to be true? We would have less face today had we turned our back on Korea, and we would know it in our heart. In New York, this is Hal Boyle, AP.
This is Washington, Lyle C. Wilson, United Press. Democratic Senator McCarran of Nevada, today labeled as a pitiful thing, President Eisenhower's speech advising a college graduating class not to join the book burners. Quoting McCarran, he shows no knowledge of his subject. It's too bad a man in his position doesn't know more about it. Someone must have sold him a bill of goods, unquote. McCarran is a member of the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee, which has been searching for communist influences in schools and colleges. In a commencement talk yesterday at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire, President Eisenhower told graduates not to be afraid to go to the library and read every book. He asks, quote, "How will we defeat communism unless we know what it is?" unquote. It is generally assumed the president may have had in mind the demand by Senator Joseph McCarthy, acceded to by the State Department, that books by known communists and fellow travelers be removed from overseas information libraries which the department operates. In Washington, D.C., this is Lyle C. Wilson.
This is the nation's capital. Richard C. Hodlett here. Condemned atom spies Julius and Ethel Rosenberg today signed a petition to President Eisenhower asking for a second time for executive clemency. They are scheduled to be electrocuted Thursday night. Their counsel, Emanuel Block, exhibited the petition after he and the condemned couple's two small sons visited the Rosenbergs for 2 hours in Sing Sing Prison's death house. The petition says, quote, "We address this petition to you, the President, for exercise of your superior power to prevent a crime worse than murder. We are innocent. The truth does not change. The guilt, if we die, will be America's." End quote. The president has already rejected an appeal for clemency. The two boys, 10-year-old Michael and 6-year-old Robbie, appear to be in good spirits after what may be their last visit with their parents. They frolicked and played in the visiting room as they waited to leave the prison. Quoting Michael, "They're innocent, and they say they're innocent. Of course they're innocent." Meanwhile, attorneys carried back to the Supreme Court building today their dramatic fight to save the lives of the convicted atom spies. Splitting 4-3, the court declined to issue a stay of execution. In Washington, this is Richard C. Hodlett.
This is your reporter, Arthur Everett, in New York. On March 16, 1951, Julius Rosenberg, his wife Ethel, and friend Morton Sobel went on trial as atom spies. They were not tried for treason, but they were tried under the espionage law of 1917. The government proposed to prove that Harry Gold, the mousy little Philadelphia chemist, was the chief American contact for Dr. Klaus Fuchs when the British scientist worked at Los Alamos, New Mexico, on history's first atomic bomb. Gold and Fuchs were confessed Soviet agents serving prison terms at the time of the Rosenberg trial. They were depicted as persuading Ethel Rosenberg's brother, David Greenglass, to turn over atom secrets to Gold at Los Alamos, including sketches of the lens mold, the trigger of the Trinity Trust bomb, and the fat man exploded at Nagasaki. A dramatic moment in the trial came March 9th, when Greenglass took the stand to look his sister and brother-in-law in the eye and denounce them as betrayers. Harry Gold was brought from prison to swear that the stolen atom secrets were sent immediately to the Soviet Union. On March 21, 1951, Julius Rosenberg took the witness stand. Point by point, he denied the testimony of Greenglass and other government witnesses. He refused, however, to answer seven questions designed to determine if he was ever a communist. The jury debated the issues for 19 hours, and on March 29, 1951, found all three defendants guilty. On April 5, 1951, trial judge Irving R. Kaufman, haggard from sleepless nights over the decision that laid before him, ascended the bench to pronounce sentences of death for Julius Rosenberg and his wife. Quoting the 42-year-old Judge Kaufman, "Only the Lord can find mercy for what you have done." Sobel escaped with 30 years in prison. In Kaufman's view, his was a lesser role in the conspiracy. He eventually wound up in Alcatraz. Greenglass was rewarded for his cooperation. His wife was cleared of the threat of prosecution. He got a relatively light sentence of 15 years. Kaufman told him, "You helped us strike a death blow to the trafficking of our military secrets by foreign agents." In New York, this is Arthur Everett.
Communist Poland has offered to take Julius and Ethel Rosenberg if the U.S. will lift their death sentences and let them go to Poland. That's from the Polish embassy today. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:09. Tim Michaels has this message from our Father's Day sponsor.
Well, thank you, Lou, and of course, Father's Day right around the corner. May we make a couple of suggestions for you. First of all, from Wesleyan Hardware, boy, Dad would love one of these Jacobson Rotary Power Mowers or a Jacobson Pacer. Now, this is a low-price power mower, makes grass cutting real easy for Dad. Wesleyan Hardware's got them. They're at 1024 Tower Avenue in Superior. They are the complete hardware store and can solve that gift problem for Dad. And we've got some other suggestions. How about if you stop in at Rott's? And maybe Dad needs an Arrow shirt for dress or play. Phoenix socks in new Wonder Fabrics. Rolf's Billfolds. And oh, yes, we have pajamas for Pops at Rott's. You get it for $2.95 up to $12.95. Favorite pajamas are here from Fleetway, Texatron, Mussingway, Nightcraft, and Cotton, Rayon, and Nylon. Prints and plain colors for sleeping comfort. That's Roth's at 14th and Tower, Superior. Lou?
The St. Lawrence Seaway gets its first approval in the United States Senate. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has that story.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee today approved 13-2 to authorize the United States to join with Canada in building the St. Lawrence Seaway. The bill approved is identical to the one by the House Public Works Committee. Republican Chairman Alexander Wiley of Wisconsin told reporters that he could not be certain when the bill would be debated in the full Senate. Wiley says Senators George of Georgia and Fulbright of Arkansas, both Democrats, voted against the measure. The bill would authorize the United States to build the seaway and the river's international rapids. Canada would build the other sections. Actual cost of the American construction is estimated at $96 million. Canada's share of the cost is $170-odd million. President Eisenhower has approved the Seaway proposal. On the House side today, Association of American Railroads Solicitor Gregory Prince opposed the bill. He created a flurry yesterday when he said Canada does not want the U.S. to join in building the deep channel that would permit ocean-going vessels access to the Great Lakes and here in Lake Superior. His statement was challenged by Michigan Congressman Oakman, who said the reason Canada proposed going it alone is that she's frustrated after 25 years of seeking joint participation, Lou.
Thanks, Mike. Private Lloyd Hemingway, son of Mr. and Mrs. Lloyd W. Hemingway of East 6th Street, and Army Private Donald C. Smith, son of Mrs. Clara F. Smith of East 5th Street of Superior, recently arrived in Korea for duty. Hemingway entered the Army in November and Smith in October. Both men received basic training at Fort Riley, Kansas. Smith graduated from Superior State College in 1952, was employed as a clerk for the Great Northern Railroad. He served with the 3rd Infantry Division. Hemingway is a former student of the University of Minnesota and Superior State College. He was employed by the Superior Ledgerwood Mundy Corporation. He's a member of the 25th Infantry Division.
He must be Ernie's brother.
He isn't Ernest Hemingway's brother. Besides, Ernest Hemingway is in Africa doing research for a new book.
Well, maybe he'll call it The Grapes of Giraffes. Lou Martin, the newsman with the rolling eyeballs. Our forecast for this Tuesday, June 16th, 1953. Cloudy and cooler tonight, low of around 47. but sunny tomorrow with also a tad cooler, a high of 68 degrees. Let's get the stacks of the wax rolling, Cappers. Here's Tennessee Ernie Ford and 16 Tons on the Evening Gather Round Show.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons a number 9 coal, and the straw boss said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain. Fighting and trouble are my middle name. I was raised in the canebrake by an old mama lion. Can't know a high-toned woman make me walk the line. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. If you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Tennessee Ernie Ford owing his soul to the company store. Now a feature, Cappers, keep in step with the cool cats by listening to this feature by Erskine Johnson all the way from Hollywood. Now, I just hit this button and here. Oh, let's see. No, I just hit this button here and voila! I said voila!
Give her a little smack. She can be temperamental.
Mwah. Smack as in kiss? You want me to kiss this button?
Move aside. Voila!
Direct from Tinseltown, Erskine Johnson with Hollywood Today. Flash! Hollywood's 3D boom keeps getting dire. It can't last, predictions from film industry leaders. But every new Depthy hits the box office jackpot. The latest, It Came From Outer Space, is Universal Studios' biggest moneymaker in years. 6 more films for the Polaroid glasses will be released in the next 2 months. Short story, one of Hollywood's biggest agents got tossed out of the mansion of one of Hollywood's biggest studio execs for handing him a man-to-man line on the past of a new foreign beauty signed by the biggie. And, people, Paulette Goddard filched a sexy negligee from her Sins of Jezebel wardrobe before hopping to New York. To wear while watching TV, she explained, especially the Red Button Show. So if red goes to pieces on the screen, you know why. Erskine Johnson with the Hollywood Today Minute, direct from Tinseltown.
You have to listen to him to be a cool cat?
How would I have known that the new tag for 3D pics is Depthy? Hollywood Today is brought to you by the Stardust Drive-In Theater. It's buck night tonight. Just a buck to see a star-studded double feature. Meet Me at the Fair, starring Dan Daly and Diana Lynn in Technicolor. Then John Wayne and Gail Russell in Wake of the Red Witch. Okay, campers, let's gather around and listen to Les Paul and Mary Ford, and I'm a fool to care, you guys, dolls, cats, and kittens.
I'm a fool to care. When you treat me this way, I know I love you. I'm a fool to care. I'm a fool to cry. When you tell me goodbye, you left me so blue. When you were untrue, I'm a fool to care. I know I should laugh and call it a day, but I know I would cry if you went away. I'm a fool to care. When you don't care for me, so why should I pretend I'll lose in the end? I'm a fool to care.
Les Paul and Mary Ford. Les Paul, by the way, playing the guitar. Mary Ford doing the singing. And I'm a fool to care on KUWS. Hey, we've got a special treat for you campers. Jack McKenna is on the phone from the Twin Cities.
Hi, Jack. How's television?
Hey, buddy. Hi, folks. Television is the thing. I hear you've got that new Uhud Chip station, too. WFTV on the air now.
It's a little snowy.
In June?
I mean the reception is snowy. Sometimes it comes in clear, and sometimes it's buzzy.
You mean fuzzy?
That's what I said. Why are you calling?
I've got a few minutes between wrestling matches, and I thought I'd give you guys a ring.
You know, I'm on the air.
Yeah?
Doing the radio show.
Right.
So there must be some point to this telephone call that would be of interest to our listeners.
Of course. I was thinking of taking a vacation in a couple of weeks, you know, over the 4th of July holiday, and I thought it'd be fun if you could tag along, too.
That'd be fun.
We drive Route 66 from Chicago to California, LIA. What do you think?
I think you think my Pontiac has a better chance of not breaking down than your Studebaker on a long road trip.
Oh, my little old champion is tough, Lou. Good thinking, though. There's some pretty nifty places to stop along the way, like the Mojave Desert.
I can see the headlines now. Two broadcasters disappear after taking a wrong turn off of Route 66. The search is halted after 6 hours.
6 hours?
We're more important than that. What do you say?
We'd get to see Illinois, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California.
2,448 miles. Everyone's doing it these days, hitting the road on their vacation.
Another radio first on the Gather Round Show. Two guys planning a vacation live on the air. Rapid Ray is in next with the sports. And let's hear a travel song. This is Joe Stapper checking out the pyramids along the Nile. And You Belong to Me on KUWS.
Oh,
darling, all the while you belong to me. See the marketplace in old Algiers. Send me photographs and souvenirs. Just remember when a dream appears.
Stafford and You Belong to Me on KUWS. Okay, Ray, be rapid.
You got it, King Timothy. Say, the curator is on the phone for Lou, by the way. Something about Route 666.
Ray, you beast. I hope he was just stuttering.
Well, the Superior Blues are in a twin bill with the Grand Forks Chiefs tonight at Municipal Stadium, making up for last night's washout. So starting pitchers Gideon Applegate and Paul Myers are saying the familiar chant, rain, rain, go away, come again some other day. Maybe he'll go to Wade Stadium and rain on the Duluth Dukes. The Blues are 2-2 so far, and a sweep of the Chiefs would put them in first place over the St. Cloud Rocks. Weird name for a team. On the big league circuit, in the wake of the Yankee sacking and pillaging of the Indian settlement on Lake Erie, we have this opine from columnist Ed McCauley of the Cleveland News. Organized baseball is in trouble. Its ailments will be aggravated seriously if the four-time winners continue to make a joke of the flag race. Who, for instance, beyond a few homeless knotheads from the Bronx, would be interested in watching the big team win its 19th straight game tonight at the expense of the St. Louis Browns, losers of 14 in a row. Fact is, fans, that the New York Yankees are dominating not only the standings, but the batting race. Young Mickey Mantle is setting the American League pace with a .340 batting average. Bronx bomber Gene Woodling is swatting away at .327. And Hank Bauer and Joe Collins are tied at .321. No surprise, then, that four Yankees are leading in the All-Star balloting in their positions. Shortstop Phil Rizzuto, center fielder Mickey Mantle, Bauer in right, and Yogi Berra leads all the catchers. Meanwhile, on the home front, a slow curveball that strayed out of line dumped the up-again, down-again Milwaukee Braves out of the National League lead last night. The pitch by reliever Lou Burdette hit third baseman Danny O'Connell in the ribs and forced in the winning run in the 10th inning for the Pirates of Pittsburgh. Our Braves are 15-7 in the last 22 encounters, But last night's loss puts the bums of Brooklyn back on top. And you folks out in Ashland, root on your athletics tonight at Hodgkins Park. They face the Harlem Yanks. Game time, 8:30. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Timothy?
Go Blues, go Braves, and go anyone who's playing the Yanks. Now, let's listen to...
Hey, Jack.
Right here.
I want to go on that trip on Route 66, too. I hear it's a kick.
A kick? On Route 66?
Real subtle song request, guys.
Yes, this is Douglas County Museum Curator Gerald Stowe, please. I was listening and telephoned Mr. Martin to let him know that Route 66 may only be 27 years old, but it is already considered historic in many ways.
In fact, Route 66 was established in 1926 as part of the U.S. highway system.
Yes, from 1933 to 1938, thousands of unemployed male youths from nigh on every state were put to work toiling on road gangs to pave the final stretches of the road. As a result of this monumental effort, the Chicago to Los Angeles highway was reported as continuously paved in 1938.
Boy, he sounds even creepier on the phone.
Yes, sir, and here's irony in his historic event. Tell him about the irony, Master.
That's Vivian, his assistant. Well, she's creepy, too, but a cutie.
In a loving, dead, Draculan kind of way.
You buddies are so bad. Yes, sir, the irony.
The irony that this is an in-person radio show with more people calling on the phone than in the studio.
Yes, there's irony in this legacy. A cruel irony.
That's me, sir's favorite kind of irony.
You see, Route 66 was completed by Great Depression work programs, but it was also congested by Okies and other Dust Bowl refugees as a way westward to California. In his famous social commentary, The Grapes of Wrath, John Steinbeck proclaimed U.S. Highway 66 the Mother Road.
Mather loves The Grapes of Wrath. He reads the book out loud at all of his birthday parties.
Seeing as how he's about 500 years old, what did he read before the last century?
Plato. Master is very philosophical. Oh, and I love it when Master reads out loud. He's spellbinding.
They've got crosses and silver bullets for that.
Yes, Steinbeck's classic 1939 novel served to immortalize Route 66 in the American consciousness. 210,000 people migrated to California to escape the despair of the Dust Bowl. Certainly in the minds of those who endured that particularly painful experience, Route 66 symbolized the road to opportunity.
In spite of that uplifting horror story, I'd still like to go.
He's got a knack for cheering people up.
Master, tell them more. Tell them of the war.
Yes. This is exhilarating. Completion of the all-weather capability on the eve of World War II was particularly noteworthy to the nation's war effort. A young army captain, Dwight D. Eisenhower, was making a coast-to-coast maneuver, often getting bogged down in mud until arriving on the newly paved Route 66.
Look, guys and Vivian, I've got a special treat if you let me do the show again. How about it?
Yes, sir never likes to give up control.
Bad, Vivian, bad. Yes, I will be most ecstatic to do so, Mr. Michaels.
Have at it, Timmy.
She's all yours, King Timothy.
This is why our half-hour show always goes long, you know.
All right, for all you campers and road trippers, then, here's Nat King Cole and what is now our song on the Evening Gather Round Show.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to L.A. More than 2,000 miles all the way. I get your kicks on Route 66. I go through St. Louis, stop the Missouri, and Oklahoma City looks mighty pretty. You'll see Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, King, Boston, San Bernardino. Aren't you get hip to this Miami tip when you make that California trip? I get you a kick on Route 66.
The Merry Old Soul, Nat King Cole, and Route 66 on KUWS.
This flash from Switzerland. United States Consul to Geneva, Robert, has refused to accept a petition from a group of Swiss citizens appealing for reversing the death sentence of atomic spies Judas and Ethel Rosenberg. The Rosenbergs are set to be electrocuted on Thursday night.
Hello, hello. Guys.
Oh, Jack's still on the line.
He always hogs the show.
I got to get back to the wrestling.
You wrestling now?
No, I'm the ring announcer, right? TV doesn't pay that great, so I got a little sideline. Gorgeous George is wrestling next.
And you're him?
Hey, Ray, they've got something called motels on Route 66. They're like hotels, except you can park your car right at the room.
Holy highway. They must have wide hallways.
Stay tuned for Rosemary Clooney, followed by Red Skelton and Martin and Lewis. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and it really is in Route 666.
Say goodnight, Jack.
Good night, Jack.
Yes, good night, Jack.
Master, a lot of the night.
Bad, Vivian. Bad.
Good night, Jack.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1953, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Don Hansen, Danielle Kading, John Munson, Kent Vogel, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1953 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.